Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome back. And thank you for listening to the show. It's 10 o'clock now, so I'll be going. Anyway, thanks for stopping by, and we'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We get together on Saturday, and we discuss your yard, your landscape, your garden, house plants, potting mixes, soil improvement, pruning bugs, diseases, and plant removals, and all that other kind of stuff. Please remember, my words are strictly to open opportunities. Then it's going to take effort on your part during this great marathon called gardening. It's never going to be a sprint. If it is a sprint, then something is not going to really work all that well. This is your show, and I appreciate you being there. Thanks to Matt. He's here back producing again. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations throughout the metro area. And during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, which is a landscape evaluation from a problem standpoint, aesthetic standpoint, or whatever it happens to be, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, the homepage. There's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. So today, my Good Gardening Stroll is going to be in Ladue off Clayton Road. Let's see. The Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I headed and turned on Leona, then Loughborough, then the twists and turns this morning as I was entering Carondelet Park. Trees were moving and the morning beat from the rain as it was falling. Sky to the east was showing signs of some lighter color, so it looked like it wasn't going to rain all that long. So I decided to head to the boathouse, lake. And from a distance, I thought, wow, look at all the water lilies that are on the lake water. But it was patches of algae instead. Oh, no. Oh, well. I got out of the car and headed down towards the boathouse, and the center fountain was striking as ever. There was a trio of fishermen casting their lines under or near a pergola because the fishing dock or deck or whatever it's called is under rehab, so you can't go out on that. So you have to kind of stay on the shore more or less to do any fishing. The maple trees lined walkway that comes down to the boathouse actually historically has been filled with annuals, summer bulbs, shrubs, and perennials. They've all been cleared out. The only thing that stands there now is basically the flagpole and a row of kind of trees that kind of nondescript trees that don't look, I mean, they look okay, but they're not great. There were some white ducks and mallards. They saw me coming and said, let's get out of here. I don't like the looks of this guy. And there was some kind of ducks there that I don't know what these ducks are. But they look like regular ducks body-wise, except for their faces. I mean, they have red lumps and stuff around their eyes, and they look kind of like a combination of a turkey and a duck. So what is that thing? I do not know. But anyway, there was 3 of them there, so quite a wild scenario with the ducks. There was a squirrel that has a tan tail. He was running all over the place. And some of the lakeside plantings were... there were some crepe myrtles. There were some oak leaf hydrangeas. Well, this is on the other side of the boathouse. The oak leaf hydrangea, man, those white flowers, huge. Usually you don't see them quite that big, but they were great. There's hosta, there's viburnum, there was some boxwood as well, along with some daylilies that are ready to pop open within a week or so. A dog walker didn't seem to mind the rain, and the view across the lake was actually fantastic because you can see those historic stone walls that had been built, then conifers, both deciduous and, or the trees, both deciduous and conifers. They were looking very good with various shades of green. Birds of all kinds were hopping all over the place and chirping to their friends. And it was a very nice rainy morning at the boathouse in Carondelet Park. So, if you have any questions, give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Again, Matt is back. He'll be taking your call, and all you need to do is give him your name and where you're calling from, and he'll get you onto the computer list. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, a small amount of rain this morning, but that does not mean do not water your lawn or your plants or your garden or anything else. This is got to get that stuff done. Even if they're predicting rain for later on in the evening or tonight, it's actually better, you know, to water before a rain is coming. So if you see rain in the distance, go ahead and water. Why? Well, because that softens the ground. And so when the rain does come, there's not so much rain off. It penetrates into the ground and helps the root system of your plants, whether it's lawn, trees, shrubs, perennials, vegetables, herbs, anything else. So a lot of times people will say, I'm out there watering. They drive by and say, it's going to rain. Why are you watering? And that's why. So I can get the ground ready, get it softened so it can absorb as much of the rainfall as possible, and then it won't just run off the surface. Let's head out to St. Peter's for the first call and go into Sam's yard. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a problem with, I've had two trees removed from my front yard. In the spring, I've had the grass growing, I mean, unbelievable. Now that it got off to the hot weather, it's died where the two trees were removed.
Right.
Tell me what I need to do. I've got two bare spots.
There's not too much you can do. You're not going to get any grass to grow there. You can get the grass to germinate, but it's not going to survive. Because there's too much, even if you got all the wood shavings, where the stump's ground out and everything else, there's too much wood right in that spot. So you're not going to get any grass to grow there for a while. So you can either just mulch it and put some decorative thing there. A gentleman called a couple weeks ago and said what he does, I guess he has a landscape company, he sort of builds raised beds over those areas, backfills them with like a topsoil compost mix, and then plants, you know, some decorative type things in there as opposed to lawn. But you're never, ever, ever for several years going to get successful lawn that's going to survive, you know, for more than just one season in these locations.
All righty. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Sorry. And also just realize also, you know, the root system, even though it's been beheaded and everything else, is still going to continue to absorb nutrients and moisture. So there's going to be impacts related to the root system as well as right where the stumps were. So unfortunately, Sam, there's not too much you can do, but let's come back east to Chesterfield from St. Peter's and go into Stu's yard. Stu, how are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
About 5 years ago, we planted two groupings of hydrangea. One of the groupings has continued to grow very tall, very big. I never touched the stalks at all because I heard you told me that before. Well, the patch is 20 feet around, 4 feet high, and I don't even have an inkling of a blossom. The second grouping is a little shaded. The first grouping's full sun.
Mm-hmm.
The second grouping's a little shaded. They've grown up to about 18, 24 inches, and I've got a lot of blossoms. But I can't figure out why the grouping that's growing big, gets plenty of water, gets plenty of nutrients, won't set a blossom. And the second year we put them in, we had hundreds of blossoms.
The only thing I can think of is this, you know, whatever hybrid this particular one is, it's not flowering. And I know you got the same ones and, you know, why that happens the way it does. I would say if you've had a full year where you've had no flowers on this thing, you know, go ahead, leave it for this year. I'm assuming the foliage, everything is full size, dark green, as you would expect out of the hydrangea. I would get rid of them, you know, if they're not going to give you what you're really going for. So either they were a lot of times production nurseries will use very specific type of chemicals to make it so the plants will be in bloom when you buy them, and then there's enough left residual-wise, which could kick off another bloom the following season. But then if there's not enough of that in this location, and again, if the plants look healthy and they're not blooming, then there's something wrong with this particular group. And especially if it's a whole group, that's, you know, I'm assuming, like I said, that the, you know, the plants look good and it's not like related to planting them too deep or to anything else as opposed to the other one that looks great.
That chemical that the nurseries use to start them, could I buy that somewhere?
No, it's not available. Okay. It's basically, you know, it's a, you know, it's for industry wise. It's like the lawn services and people come out, you know, that are professionals. They have access to certain chemicals that the homeowner doesn't. Now, they're not necessarily that much different, but they are a little bit different. So, no, there's not. If you want to try, have you fertilized them?
I used Miracle-Gro for hydrangeas.
Okay, then you're doing everything just right, and if you're not getting any blooms off of them, to me, there's something wrong with them just in general.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, and I mean, why that's the case, you don't really know. It's just kind of like, you know, you grow up in a family, you have sisters and brothers, and none of you look the same, and none of you end up the same height, none of you end up being able to do the same things athletic-wise and everything else. And I'm not saying the plants are in that same circumstance, but it's very similar to that. So let's go now to South County and into Roger's yard. Hi, Roger.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I heard you talking about the ducks in Cronulla Park.
Yes.
Those are called Muscovy.
Muscovy.
Muscovey.
Wow.
We've got a whole bunch of them at our house. Several years ago, we bought a couple down at an animal swap in Waterloo, and since then we've had a lot of young ones, and we've got probably 25 or 30 of them in our yard right now.
They are scary looking.
Yeah. They're a native of South America.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the insight. I figured somebody would call and let me know, but I go to Cronulla Park a lot, but I'd never seen them there before.
And yeah, they don't quack either.
No. I tried to get them to quack. I even tried to chase them, and you know, a lot of ducks will start quacking if they have to run.
But yeah.
No,
they
just didn't.
They talk to each other. They kind of hiss a little bit, but very quietly.
And they wiggle their tails a lot.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. They that's their friendly. They're talking to you. Yeah, they're very friendly ducks. They don't fly very far. They're pretty heavy.
Yes.
They get over the fence, but they're interesting ducks, and they're very tame. We got a lot of mallards here too, but the mallards, we can't tame them, but the Muscovies, they come right up to eat out of your hands, so practically.
Oh, man, oh man. Yeah, they didn't seem to mix, you know, mingle with the, like, there's white, you know, ducks there, and there's mallards.
No, they don't
there.
Mingle. They kind of stay there themselves. Yeah,
there's a whole bunch
of mallards here, and they stay in one group, and the Muscovies stay in another.
Yeah, they seem like a gang of their own, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they're interesting.
Well, thanks, Roger.
Okay. Thanks.
I mean, Muscovy ducks, that was a new one on me. I just thought, wow, these things are really, and how they ended up there, who knows, maybe somebody just happened to drop them off. Let's go up to St. Anne and go into Jack's yard and see what's going on with Jack. Jack, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine, sir. Listen, I have a Bradford pear in my front yard. And first I got one leaf that got a little bit of red spot on it. Next thing I know, the whole tree is starting to turn brown.
Ooh. That's not a good sign.
It's starting on the south side. House sits west, and it's on the south side. And the leaves are a little smaller, yet the leaves on the north side are bigger, but yet the whole thing is turning yellow, then red, yellow, then brown, and then they're just now starting to drop.
Yeah, it's you know, if it's showing that kind of sign, it's a goner. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you could leave it if you want to, but it's not going to recover from that.
Well, what I got, so what is it, blight or something,
yeah,
or what?
Right, exactly.
I mean, I had it trimmed probably late part of spring. That probably hurt it, didn't it?
May not have, and maybe it was already internal. Usually if you're going to have something that dramatic, it's already inside the thing, and that's, you know, kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah. So I talked to the guy that trimmed my tree. I said, well, maybe it just got sunburned. I said, really?
No, it's not. That's not sunburn. Because, I mean, the foliage is, you know, I mean, it's acclimated. It's not a new plant or anything else. So this is, you know, that's not what you're really looking at. So it's basically a goner. And, you know, the Bradford pears, the Calorie pears, that whole flowering pear group, they can go through this pretty darn quick. And I mean, in one season, they can start heading downhill. Usually it's not a half, a whole tree at one time, but that's kind of, you know, it's... You could leave it if you want to, but it's not going to get any better than what it is next year.
Well, what I'm thinking is the guy wasn't very forthcoming with me, and I just probably won't use him again.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's probably good, but, you know, good thought process on your own. But, yeah, it's not going to come around again. And hopefully, you know, he's cleaning all his tools wherever he has been, so he doesn't, you know, he didn't bring this in, like I said, because it's, you know, you can't inoculate a tree with a, you know, a blight like this that's going to cause this to happen. And it won't happen in within a month or something. So the tree already had to have it, and the fact that you just got it pruned just happened to be coincidental more so than anything else.
Right. Well, I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's fire blight, because that's the thing that usually with fire blight on, you know, Bradford pears or pear trees, usually it's individual like 6 or 8 inch tips on the branches, and it just keeps going and going and going. But for it to happen all at once like this, that is not a good sign. So fire blight is one of the major diseases that, you know, Bradford pears, Cowrie pears, all those flowering pear trees have. There's other trees that get it too, but that's the one that, you know, most of us are most familiar with. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Folks, the heat and humidity can really accelerate disease, viruses, and bacteria problems, and the damage can range from cosmetic to deadly. So just like the gentleman, it has to be probably an internal blight. It didn't sound like fire blight, though, anyway, with his Bradford pear or his, you know, Cowrie pear, whatever. But just realize that for the fungicide to be really effective, you have to apply it before the fungus really is there and noticeable. So in other words, you have to keep sort of track of plants historically that have had fungus problems, black spot, or whatever type of fungus it happens to be. Even the lilacs with the powdery mildews and things like that, or your phlox. You have to spray the first fungicide before any of that stuff shows up. Or else, yes, you can spray it, but it's not going to eradicate the problem. All it's going to do is maybe slow down its, let's say, invasive quality. So just realize that if you do have fungus problems, whatever it happens to be, you've got to keep track and start spraying before the fungus, virus, or anything else starts showing up. Let's go to South St. Louis and go into Terry's yard. Terry, how are you?
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I called you a couple weeks ago with a problem with my bell pepper plants. I don't know if you remember, but I had brown spots and the leaves were turning yellow and falling off and the plants were just not doing very well.
Right.
And you advised me to get some tomato vegetable food for them.
Right.
And I just wanted to let you know that it worked perfectly. And my plants have came back and they're full and they're just, I've got all kinds of blooms and the plants are doing just very well. I just wanted to let you know online that your advice was spot on.
Well, great. I appreciate that. And, you know, I never listen to the Garden Hotline guy, so it's nice to hear that he knows what he's talking about sometimes.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much.
Yeah,
sir.
Thank you. And, yeah, this is for anybody. I mean, those fertilizers that are specifically made for certain plant groups, they have certain things in them that the other fertilizers will not have. So just realize that. So thanks, Terry. I greatly appreciate it. And anybody, a gentleman called last week about his asparagus patch. Now, this is a time of year, you know, you're probably finished, you know, harvesting all your asparagus. But it's probably past the point of where it's actually asparagus. It's probably erupted out in all kinds of like feathery looking leaves. Let that stuff go. But this is a time when you want to fertilize your asparagus. And with asparagus, because it's an agricultural type crop, Triple 12 works very good for that. Triple 12 fertilizer was developed for agricultural use. So in other words, a one season type fertilizing. So if you know that you've had a soil test done and you don't have excessive amounts of phosphorus and potassium, which are the last two numbers on a fertilizer series of three numbers, then Triple 12 works works fine. So with your asparagus, if you do happen to have that, go ahead and fertilize it now. Let's head over to Collinsville and go into Chris's yard. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Very good.
I'm calling because I'm getting ready to put in a drip system in around the outside of my house. And my question is about specifically the faucet that is the joining piece from the hose to the house. When do you know, or when should that be replaced?
Wow. So you mean actually the exterior faucet that you would just turn on?
Right. I don't have any leaking problems, but the concept of thought is that this is going to be on 24/7, and a timer will then distribute that water to my plants evenly.
Right.
There's going to be constant pressure coming through there. I just wondered, what should I be looking at? Is it something I need to replace? I'm kind of lost with how to start from that point.
Right. I would say go to your favorite hardware store and talk to them about it. If this is just sort of the classic, you know, depending upon how old your faucet is, whether it's leaking now or not or anything else, ask them if you should replace this with a more heavy duty type faucet for this kind of circumstance. Because, yeah, putting water pressure on it, I don't know if that has an impact or not, but it sounds like to me that you're having some pretty logical sense when you're somewhat concerned with it. So before you get too involved in this, I would go and just ask somebody at the, you know, your favorite hardware store what their suggestion is.
I appreciate that. Is there any tips you can give me as far as what I can do to kind of assure this to work?
They work fairly well. I used to use one. I don't use them anymore. Now I just use soaker hoses because of, the circumstance of my landscape and everything else. But, as long as it's been installed correctly and the plant material that you're trying to water with it is going to get watered, that's basically all you need to be, assured of. And then obviously the mechanical aspects of it are going to work well. The timer, make sure you got a good quality timer, because those things go a little bit funky too. I'm assuming this is a timer that's not solar powered or anything that you have to plug into an outlet.
No, I'm going to keep it. Well, I am going to plug it into an outlet, but I'm going to keep it indoors so it's away from any corrosion or outside.
Oh, good. Okay. Because I know I have some timers, and some of them are pretty darn old. They're like 12, 14 years old, but still, occasionally they do just kind of die and they don't function anymore. The clock, you can pick it up or you can always listen to it to see if the clock on the interior of it is still working, or just put your ear close to it. But beyond that, it sounds like you've got a good thought process.
Is there any last question? Is there anything I can add to this for auto fertilizing just to kind of take me right out of the equation?
Well, what I've done is, I don't know what type of drip system you have, but if you have a way that you can add, let's say, an attachment to it and just virtually have a bucket of, let's say, Miracle-Gro or whatever type of fertilizer you're going to use in this situation, the powder, you mix the water, you've got it all stirred up, and then you have a siphon pipe or hose that goes down into the bucket. And then it's, as the water moves through the drip system, it'll siphon some of the fertilizer out and feed it that way. That's about the only thing I can think of.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for your time. I'll look into those things.
Great. Well, good luck with that. And yeah, it sounds like you got a good process. I have one of the faucets on my house. The house was built in 49, the same year I was born. But one of the faucets is, so I have to go over with the pliers every so often and crank the top of it where the handle is, because some way, I don't know how that gets loose, but I, in reality, should just get the thing replaced, but I just haven't gotten around to doing that. So, but it is something you should be certainly concerned with, especially if this drip system's extremely important with what you're trying to grow. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. If you do have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, a couple tips for the best flavor and aroma out of your herbs. Remember, they're sun lovers, so put them in the maximum amount of sun that you have. If they're not getting at least 5 or 6 hours of sun, then you're probably not going to get too much out of them. And when you do fertilize, you're going to minimize the amount of fertilizing, only half your label rate, and that's only basically every 6 or 8 weeks. So don't over-fertilize and let the soil dry. So they want to have a drier soil. And also with your tomatoes, though, just kind of the opposite. All varieties, they need to be fertilized routinely and regularly. And water, basically the soil, wherever they're wherever they're drying out, that's not good. But if they're in a pot with potting mix or whether they're in the ground, you want to keep it so they don't go through a drought stress circumstance. And if you start to see some flowers drop, that's usually because
of excessive high daytime temperatures. So that's basically what you're looking at with them. And when you put them in the ground, 45 to 60 days before you're going to get any tomatoes that you're going to actually pick. So tomatoes, you know, for people that love to water and fertilize, that's perfect. Use tomato food because it has a calcium, which is very crucial for tomatoes to do very well. And for the herbs, for people that don't want to really do a whole lot, but still they like the herbs, underwater and under-fertilized. Let's go now to Jay, and Jay's in St. Louis. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. Hi. Mike, I have two dwarf Alberta spruce trees that are potted, and I'm told that they can be pruned on the directions from Monrovia in California. They tell me that I can prune them, and what I've got, they made it through the winter very good.
Right.
But when I prune, how drastic can I do this, or what do you recommend?
To be honest with you, I would never prune them. I don't care what Monrovia Nursery says. They just don't seem to really take well to pruning. So, and if you're going to go ahead and prune them, you know, certainly don't want to do it this time of year. You want to do it as we're coming out of wintertime before the new growth begins. So sometime in February or March. And I would never cut more than, you know, an inch or two off of them. So just realize that's what you're really looking at. And if you've got the pots wherever they're sitting backed up to a wall or anything, know the backside is going to, the tree's going to go, uh-oh, we're not getting any sunlight on the backside. So it's going to start dropping the needles in a couple years.
No, I've turned the pots because you had given me that recommendation last fall. But I want to keep them cone-shaped, and now there's a great deal of new growth on them, but it's kind of irregular. They're looking a little raggy, let's say.
Right.
So
there's too many diseases and airborne-type things, and they're a little bit iffy anyway. So I would hold off and not prune them right now. If you want to go ahead and try it, you could go ahead and you may make it through fine, but that's just not something I normally recommend, you know, for any kind of conifer this time of year. Now, if you did want to do some pruning, you could certainly prune any kind of maple tree, any of the birch trees or beech trees, but I just don't recommend pruning any kind of conifer or anything with a needle this time of year.
So, and you're saying, when do you recommend it?
Basically, let's say sometime after, let's say October, you know, when the weather's starting to change, the viruses and fungus and bacteria are not going to be quite as prolific as they are during the heat of the summertime. So then all the way up until the new growth begins sometime in, you know, April, March, whenever it happens to grow, start the following year.
Okay, very good. One other question.
Sure.
I have three beautiful tomato plants that are blooming, and actually I got my first tomato, but I bought them in fairly small pots. So I set them in bigger pots, and they seem to be taking a lot of water.
Right.
Should I keep them in those pots and keep the water in them?
Are you saying, did you pull them out of the original pot and put them in larger pots?
No, I bought them, and they were already potted, and they already had the tomato crates around them.
Okay, how big's the actual pot that they're growing in right now?
Oh, probably 14, 16-inch pots.
That's probably not too bad. I prefer a little bit bigger, personally. I'm not growing tomatoes this year, but we've grown them off and on for years, and the smaller the pot just means the more you're going to have to, as the heat builds up and gets more and more and more intense, you're just going to have to monitor the watering more in a pot that size. So the bigger the pot, you can put a saucer. Put a saucer underneath it and just, you know, make sure there's always some water in that saucer and the bottom of the pot.
Okay. And then on the tomato food, because they're in that much water, is it okay to feed them like every 2 weeks, or what do you recommend?
Every 2 to 3 weeks, that's fine. You want to make sure they don't go through any kind of nutrient deficiency.
Okay, thank you for your help.
Yep, good luck with that. Yeah, 16 inches is a little bit small, but just means you just have to watch them a little bit closer. Rosemary in Nashville, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great.
I have a question about grapevines and blackberry vines. I have about 50-foot line of them, and I pulled the weeds out from underneath them, and they're growing back again. And I've seen in vineyards where they don't have any weeds under them. What do they use?
They probably maybe use an herbicide that's, you know, like a pre-emergent type herbicide. Now, if you have grassy weeds, so in other words, things that look like grass, you can actually use a grass killer that won't impact your grapes or won't impact your blackberries, either one, because they're broadleaf plants as opposed to a grassy thing. Now, if you have broadleaf weeds underneath there, then mulching, those type things is a good way to at least get it started. It suppresses some of it, but you're still going to have to go out there and maybe use something like a wick applicator, which is a bottle that you've put herbicide in, and then it has a tube and then a sponge, and then you can just dab it on the things that you're trying to kill.
Okay, good.
So it's pretty, I mean, it's not really that difficult. And then you just realize that just because you get rid of the weeds 1 year doesn't mean they're not going to be back, not necessarily the same ones, but a similar variety the following year.
Right.
So just it's going to be an ongoing process.
I pulled them once, and they're back again, and so I thought.
That's why they call them weeds. And the thing is, you know, the interesting thing is anything that's too easy to grow, we hate. And so,
right.
But anyway, grapes and blackberries, that sounds great.
And they're getting ripe now.
Whoa, all right.
Yes.
So, the weeds really do, you know, they don't do a whole lot necessarily, but they can compete with nutrients and moisture and everything else. That's why you want to keep them fairly weed free.
Right, right. Thank you so much.
Yep, good luck with that. And, I'll tell you what, folks, I don't know if you got that, what I was talking about pruning with the Alberta spruce, but this time of year, if you have a silver maple, if you have a sugar maple, Japanese maple, amber maple, red maple, any type, they can be pruned this time of year. Also realize that the birch trees, the river birch in particular, are already starting to drop the leaves. So usually it's not, you know, mid-June when it starts to happen, but this year it's already starting to drop, and that's, you know, related to temperature, moisture, and everything else. Even if we've had rainfall, it doesn't really matter. The tree starts dropping a lot of leaves. So if you start seeing yellow leaves underneath your birch trees, then that's what's happening. It's just a natural thing that happens this time of year. But they can be pruned as well, white spire birch and river birch both. And then the beech trees, if you have a tricolor beech or a purple beech tree, you can do that. If you have longer branches, remember, cut them off in sections with the final cut, leaving only a stub of about a half inch or so. That exposes the cambium layer, so that way you're going to know that you can get this thing put together and cut right so it can heal. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We will be back after the news.